This is the Education Gadfly Show.
I mean, and this is the funny thing here. The message is, let's make America more like Washington.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming our special guest for this week, the Milo Venti something or other of education reform, Scott Pearson. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Also here, Alyssa Schwenk, who made me use that Milo thing as hey, our Mike, pop culture reference.
Yeah, and you almost nailed it.
Okay, Milo
Ventimiglia.
Ventimiglia.
I am 98% sure.
And yeah. Why? Who is this person?
So this podcast will come out the day after This Is Us, the broadcast hit of the year. It's a very good show. I like it a lot. Yes. Comes back. And that actor plays the main character whose last name is Pearson. And it's all about the Pearson family.
Ah,
so I thought it was a nice
it
little.
It all comes together.
Everything came together.
Yes. And that actor was nominated for
He was nominated
Emmy, right?
for an Emmy. Yep. Did not win. But it's a good show.
It is a good show.
Isn't
I started
it?
Watching it last week.
Everyone can watch it. It's so good.
I watched the opening episode and enjoyed it.
It's a
very touching.
Nice twist at the end.
Right? Yeah.
Highly recommended from the Education Gadfly Show.
So Scott Pearson is not the subject of a television show yet, but he might be someday because he is the executive director of the DC Public Charter School Board, perhaps the most effective quasi-governmental institution in the world. Scott, that's my opinion.
That's nice of you to say.
But at the very least, there is widespread agreement that it's a very good charter school authorizer and has been responsible for the great success of DC's charter school sector. And we are going to talk about some things, all things charter, with Scott in this week's Ed Reform Update. All right, Scott. The topic we want to talk about today is one that just makes everybody so happy. It's so lovely. It's closing bad charter schools. Woohoo. This is something that you get to do, have to do, sometimes do in your role in DC. And there's some people out there in the charter school world, certainly in the school choice world, who think that when we close charter schools, we're being paternalistic. We are overruling the wishes of parents. And in a place like DC, that means oftentimes poor and minority parents. What do you say to those critiques?
Closing charter schools is never easy. It's never fun. It's the most difficult thing that a charter school authorizer has to do, but it is absolutely essential. 20 plus years ago when the charter movement began, I think that there was a belief that it wouldn't be necessary for charter authorizers to close schools very often because parents would decide. Parents typically want the best for their child. And so if a school was low performing and that school was a school of choice, why would a parent choose that school?
Especially if they had better options.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What we found over the years, though, is that some really bad schools continue to serve lots of students. And while it may seem paternalistic, it is essential to both the health of the charter school movement, as well as to realizing the promise of charter schools that those schools need to close.
All right. Now, you say really bad schools. All right. Now, some of the folks, especially in the libertarian right, say, oh, well, you authorizers, you're just sitting in your offices looking at spreadsheets of test scores, deciding that these schools are really bad schools. Is that true in the case in DC? Is that what you mean? You're just looking at test scores, low value added, that sort of thing?
We spend a lot of time looking at scores. It's absolutely true. We think that if we're going to make a difficult decision like closing a school, it needs to be based on principally objective data rather than our subjective feeling that, well, we walked into the school and it didn't look great. So for that reason, we put a lot of attention to things like test scores, but not just test scores. Value added is important, the growth that students make each year. We also look at really important indicators. For example, one that is looking at a spreadsheet, but we think it tells us volumes about a school, is the re-enrollment rate at that school. If we see a school with where a third of the students each year leave the school and they're just going out and convincing new parents to come in who quickly realize that the school isn't very good, that tells us a lot about the parent experience at the school.
And do you, though, also, do you go in and look at the school? I mean, do you know these schools? If you're going to close a school and you see these indicators on the spreadsheets that look bad, does your staff also have a sense of what's happening in that school?
We do.
For example, you know, is there a turnaround underway? Are they getting their act, finally getting their act together on curriculum or not? Do they have a new leader who shows promise or not? How does that work?
We do. We try to meet with the boards of struggling schools every year.
Yep.
And so 2, 3, 4 years before we would ultimately close a school, we will have met several times with the boards of that school, discussed our concerns with the school, and heard from them about what their plans are, what their challenges are. And so by the time we get to a closure, we know a lot about the history of the school. Mm-hmm. We also visit the school. We have, in DC, we agreed with the schools who wanted us to visit, but didn't want us to be completely subjective.
Yep.
And we agreed on a rubric that all the schools thought was a good one, which is the Charlotte Danielson framework. Mm-hmm. And so we train our staff on the Charlotte Danielson evaluation protocols, and we go into all the schools, particularly low-performing schools, we're in there every year, and evaluate the schools that way. I visit schools. If we have a school that is potentially up for closure, usually all of our board members will pay a visit to that school. So by the time we get to a closure, we don't just know the numbers, but we know a lot about actually what it's like in the school building.
Something that the charter sector was designed to do, and something that I love about DC's charter sector, is that it's not, you know, the same model or type of school in every situation. You have some schools like KIPP in DC that are very no excuses, very high performing, kind of the idea of a charter school. But then you also have schools that maybe target older learners or more diverse populations or more higher risk populations. And how, when you're approaching how to support a school, do those kind of models of diversity come into play?
Well, you're absolutely right. We have a tremendous range of types of schools, diverse approaches. Mm-hmm. We have 120 different public charter schools in Washington, D.C., serving almost half of the students. And as you said, they range from college prep, no excuses. We have Montessori schools. We have 6 bilingual, immersive bilingual education programs. We have a number of expeditionary learning programs. So we have all sorts of different types of schools. But ultimately, they're all held accountable for the same results. Mm-hmm. If you're a high school, we're asking, what's your graduation rate? 4 and 5 year. We're asking, what percent of your students were admitted to schools? What were their SAT or ACT scores? What percent earned an AP or an international baccalaureate credit? Those are all the same metrics that we use for all schools. And if a school is struggling, we will try to support them in terms of making it clear to their board where they're struggling. We will make sure that they know about all the resources that are available to struggling schools in Washington. But we as an authorizer think that it's overstepping our role to actually go in and provide direct hands-on support to that school.
And, you know, one thing that you have in D.C. is this virtuous cycle where it is possible to close those bad schools in part because you have been willing to open new good schools. Mm-hmm. And it has not been all that hard to recruit some great people and organizations into the city to create high quality schools.
We're very, very lucky that way. For example, we closed a low performing school a couple of years ago and just approved one of our highest performing schools, a school called Mundo Verde, to replicate and move into the building of that school that had closed. So we will very shortly have a school serving as many students as were there before, but at much higher quality.
You know, in Ohio, where we do a lot of on the ground work, you know, we do not have such a virtuous cycle. In some cases, we have a vicious cycle in that there's just very few high quality charter schools. There are some, they are out there, but there's not enough of them. A lot of low quality schools. And even in some cities, because of declining enrollment, you know, dying cities, Cleveland still losing enrollment overall, you have great charter schools with empty seats. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it reminds me just how different this looks in a city that is booming like DC versus some of our cities, especially in the Rust Belt, that are still struggling mightily. And these things go together, right?
I mean, I
think the charter sector is partly responsible for this rebirth of Washington, DC, and families willing to stay here when their kids get to be school age. Certainly the improvements in DC public schools also. But it also helps that you have this growing population, growing middle class, growing revenue. I mean, all of that helps.
And being a talent magnet. People want to live here. Great school leaders want to open schools here. Mm-hmm. There's an advantage to being in the nation's capital because your work is seen not only by the families of the people you serve, but also by national folks like you who can spread the word about the success of school choice and education reform.
Yeah, we've been pretty gung-ho on DC in the last couple
of... Yeah, well, look at the data, right? I mean, this is the funny thing here. The message is, let's make America more like Washington.
I'm curious. I don't know the details of Cleveland, but if you have high-performing schools that are struggling to fill their seats, I would ask the question of how many lower-performing charter schools are there that maybe should have been closed by their authorizer.
That's exactly. It is too much supply and too much supply of low-quality schools. And so all the schools are under-enrolled. That stresses their finances and everything else. Mm-hmm. Of course, in Ohio, we have this crazy system of dozens of authorizers. I think in Cleveland alone, there's something like 20 different groups that can authorize charter schools. And so, the mayor's been trying to get control over that. That's a long story and has basically not been able to. But some of those authorizers need to close the low performers. That would help the high performers. And again, some of the libertarians would say, that would be crony capitalism. You're getting too involved in the market. Let the marketplace play out. Look, that's taken a long time for that to work, right? And it's just this structural problem right now that if you have too many schools chasing too few kids, it's not good for the schools. It's not good for the kid, right?
It's not. And I would, for those who embrace charter schools, for those who want to see school choice succeed, I think it's a real problem when you look at the overall performance of the charter sector and it's not doing any better than the overall performance of the traditional public schools. Yeah. Simply saying that you're offering families a choice, I don't think is a compelling enough reason to win the political battle.
Right.
We have to be able to say that our schools are higher performing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, thankfully, there's not many places left, I think, where you say that anymore. Even in Ohio, our beleaguered Ohio, we have a new analysis out just today showing that Ohio's charter schools do, in fact, outperform their district counterparts, at least if you take the e-schools out of the equation.
Which is a whole nother topic of conversation.
All right. Well, Scott, we are super excited what you and your team have done in D.C. Big fans. You'll notice, by the way, I've been writing about how, if we're going to do more charters in D.C., we should do them through your charter school board and not try to do fake charters through the district. Let the district be the district. Let you guys do charters. Hope other people can emulate what's happened here in D.C. It's really exciting.
Thank you.
Come back soon.
All right. Thanks so much,
Mike. All right. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. David Griffith, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Mike.
David filling in for Amber this week. And David, Alyssa is all excited that This Is Us is coming back on the air this week. Is there a fall show you're excited about?
Star Trek?
Wait, what? That's back.
There's a new Star Trek. It's always back.
Is there really? Another Star Trek?
There is. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you just admitted that.
Do you speak Klingon, David? I'd like to know.
Hey, David, since we last had you on the show, you have become something of a sensation, an international superstar yourself for your study on teacher absenteeism in charter schools versus traditional public schools. It has been covered widely all over the place, including in many of the conservative media outlets.
Yeah, superstar or supervillain.
There you go. And it's a little funny because David is a proud Oregon progressive, but I digress. You have a study this week that is kind of related.
Yeah, the study is about unions in charter schools. Holy smokes. Yeah, look at me. I get to flaunt my reasonableness now. I'm excited about it.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it. So the study is called Teachers, Unions, and School Performance: Evidence from California Charter Schools, and the authors are Jordan Matsudera and Richard Patterson. And it's a pretty interesting study, honestly. Just to skip to the top line, essentially, the authors find about a 0.2 standard deviation boost in math scores following unionization in California charter schools. And the study seems pretty solid in most regards to me. It's a difference in differences study.
Oh, I can explain this.
You can now, yeah. So, that's not like necessarily the strongest research design, but they satisfied the assumptions, and it's fairly robust, the results. There was a previous study that did use similar data and came to found no effects, and it turns on these really technical questions of whether or not you should do a weighted or unweighted regression. Suffice it to say, I'm mostly convinced. I think the more interesting thing is, the question is sort of whether this is generalizable, obviously, we want to see more studies because this is an incredibly new area. Mm-hmm. I mean, unionized charter schools have only been around for, I don't know, a few years here. There's like only two or three studies on them.
And they make up something like 7% of all charters?
And charters themselves are a small percentage.
So actually, that's a great point that you brought that up. So In our study, we said 12%. The authors actually pieced together data, and they arrive at a number of 24.5% for California.
Which is
interesting.
That could be an outlier.
It could be. Yeah, no, it definitely could be. But just that is interesting because previous studies haven't really been able to get above 15%. Yeah. So,
and that includes probably some California schools that have always been unionized because they were district schools that converted.
That's right.
But let me get, the question from my end is, you know, what do we know about these schools? I mean, what is it about these schools that they were not unionized, they decided to unionize, and sort of what should we make of that? Like,
yeah.
There was some labor unrest. People were feeling that they weren't taken, you know, seriously. So then they unionize and then the test scores go up.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
what do we think is happening there? Maybe the teachers now are feeling more supported. I mean, it's hard to know.
Yeah. And it's just math test scores, right?
It's just math test scores. That's right. The mechanism, I think this is probably the most mysterious part of the report. And if you want to cast doubt on the results, this is probably where you would start, is the mechanism is really unclear. They estimate a 0.8 year decline in teacher experience following unionization, which is, it's just really difficult to make sense of. Totally separate from the question of the impact. Sort of theory would suggest a couple different ways, right? Like boosting, you know, teacher salaries, right, to attract better teachers, reducing turnover, improving communication or teacher voice. I think it's worth pointing out that I think you have to be careful about the fallacy of composition here, among other things, right? If you're attracting better teachers, that doesn't necessarily mean from outside the profession, right? So it doesn't necessarily follow that, if all schools unionized, they would all attract better teachers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these are, again, because not all charters unionize, there's something about these schools causing them to unionize in the first place.
Okay, Mike, we'll get there. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that is probably the biggest point, right? Which is, I think there's reason to believe that these schools were badly run, right?
Yeah.
Or at the very
something
least,
was happening.
Yeah, right. People don't just wake up and decide to unionize.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all schools that were non-unionized and then transferred.
Right. So it's, even though it's like 270 unionized schools, it's only 40 that are in this sample because you need non-unionized and then switch to unionized.
Okay. So as somebody really smart told Chalkbeat, you know, that this doesn't imply that all the KIPP schools should just go out and unionize.
Spoiler alert, that was David.
That was David. That was a great quote, David.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I want to make one broader point. I know we may not all see eye to eye on this, frankly, and it's sort of ironic that here I am playing the, like, well, maybe unions aren't so bad card. But I do think that it's important to recognize that the context really is very different in the charter space, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these unions are not electing their, you know, the people who are governing them. They're not electing school board members who then in turn set policy. And there's competition. So, you know, the analogy is more to, like, the Ford, you know, automakers union, which... You know, I mean, I don't really get that worked up about one way or the other, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, oh, interesting, that a charter school union, you're arguing, is almost a private sector union.
It is. I was thinking about this, and it is. Yeah. I think it is almost closer to one. So anyway, I'm not going to convince you. I know that. I'm just, it's interesting to contemplate. Unions are such a polarizing subject in education policy, but potentially they're not all created equal. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, wow. Who's this David Griffith guy?
No, good stuff. Hey, Alyssa, David, just do me a favor. If the Fordham staff are ever talking about unionizing, you'll let me know about that, right?
We'll think about that.
All right, my conscience is clear, sort of.
Conscience is clear. All right, very interesting. Check it out, the study on unionization in charter schools in California. I hope you come back, David, sometime.
Yeah, I'll
figure it out. In a while, actually.
All right, but that is all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Alyssa Schwenk.
And I'm Mike Trilling. Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.